Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is Jim Reedy, employment attorney from Sheehan Finney. And he's going to be talking to us about how not to create problems you are trying to avoid. Tips for effective in-house anti-discrimination training. This is going to be part one of our series, of a two-part series that will be airing this week and next week. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we have a great guest. He's back, the employment attorney to the stars, Jim Reedy, Sheehan Finney. And we're going to be talking about some great stuff, anti-discrimination training, how not to create problems you are trying to avoid. This is a great topic, Jim. And again, welcome back to the show.
It's my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
Well, you know, a lot has really changed over the last year. It's been a busy, busy year. And I think this topic is very appropriate because, as we talked off radio, people are used to doing sexual harassment training. It's kind of like known. Everybody does this training. It's kind of like a given nowadays. But it's really changed and morphed over the years. And what are you really seeing at the state and federal level that is really changing what people are looking at this area and saying, hey, we have to build this up again and modify our training?
It's almost like I think I compare it, Dave, to the many times you remind your kids about doing their chores, doing their homework, the importance of good hygiene, and so on. After a while, you become Charlie Brown's teacher, and all they hear is wonk, wonk, wonk. And that has certainly happened with regard to the online sources that it's not led by a facilitator, meaning supervisors and employees drag themselves half asleep, half awake into a room and watch some facilitator who they do not know from some unknown source talking about the dangers of sex harassment. And it's almost become a self-parody. And in that regard, I think it hasn't necessarily resonated the way it should. Why do I say that? Well, because sex harassment, people thought, well, it's, you know, we're no longer in the age of madmen. People get it. They're not chasing secretaries around the desk anymore. And shouldn't this all be over? And I just say, well, what about Anthony Weiner? What about some of the more recent examples? And the statistics bear it out. The EEOC just did a study from the last 10 to 15 years and said it's pretty much been a constant. Last year, fiscal 2016, EEOC had nearly 13,000 sex harassment charges. That's just sex harassment charges. That doesn't include other forms of harassment, race, religion, and so on.
You know, that's interesting. When you really think about it, you do kind of get this mindset feel that even in the HR areas, that they also have kind of think this is a sleepy topic, right? Or they wouldn't just put out a video. They wouldn't just make somebody sit in a class and maybe check a few boxes. You know, do you think this is also prevalent in the fact that HR professionals have kind of gone sleepy on this as well?
To a certain extent, yeah. I think that they've focused on perhaps, like anything else, you focus on the more immediate concern, the more urgent concern. And what would that be right now? Well, that's everything from recruitment and retention in a difficult economy, meaning where the economy is actually improving and it's difficult to find skilled workers, to dealing with health insurance issues in a time in which, the ACA may be changing or going away, other issues that come up for purposes of compliance because there are still a large number of employment laws and it grows every day and regulations that they have to comply with. So sliding down the scale of urgency would be sex harassment because I've heard HR people say, well, we all know what it is and people basically get it.
Yeah, but do they really? And that's really the question of what we're talking about today, right? You know, so if you could just remind maybe HR professionals as well as, you know, business leaders, why this is so important from maybe a litigation standpoint or a standpoint of their liability when it comes to this. I think that would give them, maybe some gravity reminder of how important that is, having to do with, you know, states of rules and regulations that protect them, but kind of they're under the microscope. They're under the gun of what they can be sued for, either personally or organization can be sued for. Kind of give them an overview feel before we get into the really down and dirty details of this.
Sure, and I think a couple of things. One is that this law has this area of the law has evolved, and it's not just the traditional sex harassment of touching or invitation and so on. It's in some ways more subtle. It also, like I said earlier, it has expanded into other areas of discrimination, and also it's not just the underlying sex harassment, but if someone complains about something or somebody else participates in an investigation, that person may be protected under the retaliation parts of federal and state discrimination laws, which are in many ways more potent. Said another way, the underlying discrimination claim may be dismissed as being, well, it really didn't meet the standard of what the law requires. However, because the person complained, because the person participated in an investigation, they do have an active retaliation claim. So what does that mean? It's the shock and awe of employment law. And that rhyme was unintentional, but I'll still use it. the shock and awe of employment law, which is when it becomes personal, when something I've done or haven't paid attention to results in a claim against my employer, and I'm talking about an HR professional now, and it is I'm tied up with lawyers. I am the company is now taking its attention away from research and development and focusing instead on defending against a claim. This is dragging down our market share. There's adverse publicity, and perhaps of equal importance, in addition to the cost to the organization of potential exposure, or even then, just simply defending the claim, there's the potential for individual liability. And where does that typically come up? Well, on the retaliation end with regard to federal law. However, there are states like New Hampshire, where this year said, you, CEO, may be personally liable for the underlying harassment, because until that decision came out in a case this last year before our Supreme Court, it was no individual liability, it's corporate liability, it's the entity that's liable. But now we're starting to see a trend, and even little New Hampshire has a case that says the individual may be liable for the harassment in addition to potentially for retaliation. So that gets their attention, because I often say in training, how many of you have a couple $1 million squirreled away in a rainy day fund?
Oh, I'm sure everyone does, Jim. Come on, everybody.
And most homeowners and umbrella policies don't cover intentional acts or acts of this nature.
Well, I think
so
that's
it's an uninsured claim.
Right. I think that's the key right there, right? Somebody might say, well, I might be covered under insurance policy. The reality is you probably are not.
Right.
Right. You're not covered. Even if you may have some, updated policies, you may have something that protects your organization. And most people don't cover a personal errors and omissions liability policy for themselves. That's just not something.
And here's the other thing that causes HR people to lose sleep at night. One, because their job may be in jeopardy if the matter is mishandled, and because it was their job to train the supervisors and keep an eye on it. Here's the other. Whereas traditional sex harassment and other forms of harassment were something you could see, at more than a third of claims in the last year have been electronic, meaning it's no longer reach out and touch somebody. It is email, texting, sexting, social media, and the like. So the question is, how do HR professionals know about this when it's sort of insidious going through electronic transmission?
You're absolutely correct. And, it's funny, we've talked about this quite a bit. And maybe before we get into some of the tips I'm going to talk today, one of the things that comes up in this question, and as you know, you do a lot of training in sexual harassment, we do a lot of training in sexual harassment, these questions come up. Can somebody who sends, this type of information when they're off duty, right, they're not at work, but they're sending necessarily these pictures, these jokes, these things that maybe are slightly inappropriate to somebody at work, can they be like held responsible for something that's outside of the normal 9-to-5 situation?
Yeah, because 9 to 5 really doesn't exist anymore, right? Because the issue is, and this comes up in the area of wage and hour law all the time, as to whether or not it's compensable time for the employee. If he or she is initiating or responding to an electronic message that somehow benefits the employer, whether or not it was authorized in advance, meaning that, you know, I'm going to be working tonight just to let you know. If on my own I see something on the news, or I have what's called a shower thought. I'm sitting there or shaving, and I think, oh, wait a minute, this would be great for the company to think about, and I send it off. That technically could be compensable time. Similarly, if I'm sitting there and I'm surfing the internet and I see something that's, you know, controversial, salacious, and the like, and I think it's funny, or I've got more malicious intent, I want to send something that's, you know, truly provocative because I'm either got an interest in someone or I want to bother them. The question is, could the company be liable? And here's the answer that lawyers get paid a lot of money to provide, and that is, it depends. Because it depends upon the circumstances. But if I'm a supervisor and I've sent that off, and it's one of many things I've done with regard to this individual at work, or and I'm held to a higher standard because I'm a supervisor, it could very well be that the company is liable. And it also depends upon, am I using the company's server? Because if I'm using the company's server, the company would have sent out a message, presumably, that says, listen, no sent, received, or stored messages on our server are private, and we reserve the right to monitor these activities. If I'm not monitoring, and the person's using the company email system, a company handheld device that goes through the system and so on, and sends that message, and I could have monitored it, and I could have noticed it, but I didn't, the company could potentially be on notice for or responsible for failure to notice and respond in a prompt and appropriate fashion.
You know, Jim, first of all, we're talking with Jim Reedy. He is the chair, labor, and employment head of the group at Sheehan Finney. And we're talking about anti-discrimination training today, effective in-house anti-discrimination training. One of the exciting things I know you have coming up is the 29th Annual Employment Law Review and Update. It's on May 25th from 8 to 4:15 p.m. at the Castleton Conference Center in Windham, New Hampshire. You've done this, 29 amazing years. Any exciting things you want to share about this before we go to break?
29, but because we've been working out it looks like it's 26. And I think the answer is it's thankfully it's one of the most popular events in northern New England. We're going to cover a broad range of topics from hiring and recruitment all the way through an update on the ACA. The theme this year is and we're doing lots of others, of course. It's Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, and it's also federal law, which most employment law is. And it's just about everything you want to know about recent developments and updates. I think the theme this year is keys to success in times of great change. And you can take from that what you want, but it really is, there's going to be a lot going on in this next year on a state and federal level, and we're going to cover it all. Every year we sell out early, so folks that want to attend Sheehan Finney's 29th annual update and review should register early. It's on our website, sheehan.com, and last year, I think we had 325 people attend, and they stay the full day.
It's a fabulous event. It ends with a great cocktail reception at the end. How could you not go? SHEEHAN.com. Hit the events tab and go to May 25th from 8 a.m. to 4:15. We'll be doing that. We're talking with Jim Reedy from Sheehan Finney. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
When things come out of left field, having a game plan makes all the difference. Luckily, Farmers Insurance has been helping people cover their bases for 88 years, and they can help you too. Talk with an agent today so you can see if your coverage is ready for whatever curveballs may come your way. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because, well, we've seen a thing or two. Put our experience into play at Farmers.com. Farmers.com.
We are farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
Farmers.com.
Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Does your basement or crawl space have damp, musty odors? Do you worry about indoor gases and pollutants? Everyday living generates moisture that can nourish mold and odors, even asthmatic triggers. Indoor pollutants linked to respiratory ailments, birth defects, and cancers can become trapped in your home. You can't buy health, but you can buy Wave's moisture control and air quality products. Wave Home Solutions, for a dry, healthy home. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to dryhome123.com. That's dryhome123.com.
Hi, this is Carfax. You already say, show me the Carfax. But now you can say, show me millions of used cars for sale at the all-new Carfax.com, where now you can search with the power of Carfax. Want cars with no accidents reported? You got them. Used cars that are well-maintained? You can find those too. Even one-owner cars are just a click away. Plus, we're the only site where you get a free Carfax report with every car for sale. So, find the cars you want, avoid the ones you don't. Start your used car search at Carfax.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we're talking with the great James Reedy. He is the chair, Labor and Employment Group attorney over at Sheehan Finney. Jim, we're talking today about how not to create problems you are trying to avoid, tips for effective in-house anti-discrimination training. You know, we talked about in the first section a little bit about the fact that training has kind of become in this area passé, right? You know, you kind of passively think about training. You know, it's people say, oh, sexual harassment training, really? My head hurts, Eve. I got to go to that again, or I got to do it for the first time. Everybody does this. What am I really going to know? What am I going to really learn? And so you talk a little bit about some tips that we have, and these tips you have compiled, my understanding, is from the EEOC and SHRM and other resources over your years of experience. Why did you put these together? What kind of was the impetus for doing that?
You know, in June of 2016, it was the 30th anniversary of the Supreme Court recognizing sex harassment as a form of sex discrimination. And we think, gosh, it's always been around it has been around as a way in which people interact, perhaps, especially in the workplace. But it was then when the Supreme Court recognized it in 1986 that it was a form, a subset of sex or gender discrimination. Since then, of course, we've seen that body of law evolve. But in some ways, as it's evolved, I think, as you said in the first segment, people have become a bit immune to it or a little tone deaf to it. And the law has evolved and changed, and it's one that requires, because the stakes are so high, it requires still immediate attention. Of the charges of discrimination, the types of charges of discrimination, race, age, gender, and so on, sex harassment continues to be in the top three year after year. And as I said before, it's last year was 13,000 claims. And as an employer, all you need is one to disrupt the workplace. And as an HR professional, all you need is one that's perhaps been mishandled, and you put your job in jeopardy. So we thought about it, and we also saw the EEOC did a study on how employers have responded to workplace harassment and discrimination of all types, and they came out with this report, and they talked about training as being one of them, and how training has worked and how so training has perhaps not worked. So one of the things that we came up with is that the program should be live and facilitated by a qualified trainer. someone who effectively can interact with the audience. And why is that? Because if you've got passive participants that looking at a video or a computer screen, you're not going to get the full impact of what you're trying to get across. And plus, it doesn't become real if someone isn't talking about it, asking questions, and getting feedback.
You know, Jim, just as a point of this, I know that there are some states that require, you know, different types of training in this area. Maine happens to be one. California is one. Connecticut is one. If you want to say bigger programs, right, you know, California requires 2 hours of training every 2 years. These things that are out there in terms of that. How do you recommend that individuals, in terms of HR, look at getting this facilitated by a qualified trainer who interacts with the audience? You know, what's required by that, and how do you talk about the requirements in regards to that training?
Well, I think that first of all, you would want to see the person or the organization's background. You know, not every HR professional is necessarily equipped to do the training. Sometimes it's better for them to actually farm it out because they've got a little bit of distance. Because as I do the training, as you do the training, what we do is we point to the HR professional and say, and I'll talk about this in a minute, but we go through the policy and we talk about, and who you complain to. And it's better to say, and you complain to so-and-so and so-and-so into the policy and so on. And then you reinforce some of the things that perhaps the HR professional might be more reticent to talk about. And so sometimes distance is good. The other is, but you want to look at the individual and the organization that you hire to do this to facilitate what their background is, how much experience they have. Not every lawyer, not every consultant has the depth of experience you want. You want to see years of experience. You want to see feedback from their clients and customers on the effectiveness of the training, and also what training method they're going to use, how old the materials are, how relevant they are to that workplace, and so on. And I do think that the materials ought to be tailored to that particular workplace and that culture.
I think that's a big piece of it, right? So not all training is the same. Not all training for a manufacturing facility versus a retail establishment, it doesn't connect if it's not tailored directly to the individual participants that are going to be in that room.
If I'm training a group of doctors, I'm not going to use the same training materials or engineers that I would use for a group of manufacturing line assemblers and the like. It's a different group. And the law actually recognizes sort of a rough and tumble workplace. Some things are more acceptable than others. That being said, there is a bright line that you use for purposes of what generally is acceptable in sort of civil culture and society. But still, you want to look at tailoring it to the workplace and understanding. Because sometimes, like a defense contractor or a publicly traded company or others, there or even something in a particular state, there are additional requirements for purposes of reporting. So a training that, you know, you might have done in Iowa may not fly in Connecticut.
No, you're absolutely right. And there's also an individual training portions for the supervisors themselves, and we'll certainly talk about that as we go through the process. One of the other tips you provide is, I think, probably the key to any training, right? Get the C-suite on board. Get the CEO to also take the training. And I find it amazing sometimes they forget that senior leaders need to do this training as well.
Yeah, I think that the importance with the C-suite, and this is a chronic problem for HR professionals, is having a seat at the table. But unless the senior leaders, meaning we're talking about COO, CEO, CFO, and other senior managers, or active board members for that matter, are on board, because sometimes they can either be the problem or exacerbate the problem or send a mixed message. Unless they're on board with this training program or exercise, it's effectively meaningless. And they need to be held accountable as well. Therefore, should they be involved in the training? My answer to that is yes, they should. Not only should they be in the room, I recommend that they actually introduce the program and at the end have closing remarks. So basically saying, and we take this seriously.
It's not only that. It's the fact that they are saying, hey, we are not above the rules, right? We're not above the law, if you want to say. We also take this, you know, to heart. And so I think that's an incredible message that comes across. It makes a huge difference, as you know, to the individuals in the room, right? They just will take it far more seriously if the C-suite level is there.
Absolutely. And then let's go to the next level within the organization, making sure the supervisors are on the same page. I often say that supervisors are the eyes and ears of the organization, but they are also potentially the Achilles heel. If you have that supervisor who believes that he or she is above the law, or that this is my little fiefdom in this department, and what I, you know, you, you know, must do is, and comply with what I say and so on, they have to understand that as supervisors, they are held to a higher standard. And the Supreme Court has spoken to that issue, say basically that if the supervisor knows about it, knows about the conduct, and fails to act in a prompt and appropriate fashion, then the organization may not be shielded from liability. And further, to the extent that the supervisor knows or should have known about the conduct and did not stop it, it's as if the CEO knew about it at the same time and did not stop it.
It really has a powerful emphasis in regards to that. You know, it's interesting. We were talking to a group of individuals doing this type of training, and you know, one of the senior leaders basically stood up and said, "Hey, supervisors, they're not your friends, right?" And it's hard, especially when somebody's been promoted from within that line group into a supervisor role. It's just a different level.
Yeah, I think that's right, because they are held to a different standard, both in an organizational standpoint, but also from a legal standpoint, because they are effectively the vanguard. They are they're supposed to be the guardian at the gate. And if they don't enforce the policy, if they don't respond to complaints in effective fashion, there are serious consequences.
Tip number four, emphasize what is unacceptable versus what is illegal. Talk about the difference in that.
So this comes up a lot in training, and I'm sure you've seen this before, Dave, where, you know, they say, well, so what are you saying? I can't talk to someone of the opposite sex. Are you saying, you know, if so-and-so is having a good day or so-and-so is having a bad day, I can't pat them on the back, I can't hug them? Is that what we're talking about here? You know, and I actually had a case recently where a CEO of a company said, well, that's just the way I am. That's the way I joke. And you know, she understood, and the rest of the room sort of shook their heads and said, no, she didn't understand and we don't understand. I think explaining to say, let's go through it. This is not an exhaustive list, but this is what is effectively illegal. And so if we're going to talk about the definition of a hostile work environment for purposes of sexual harassment, it's severe or pervasive activity or conduct that has the effect of unreasonably interfering with someone's ability to perform their job. So severe or pervasive conduct that has the effect of unreasonably interfering, meaning that it's supposed to be bad, it's supposed to go on for a fair period of time, it's supposed to have an effect upon someone that goes beyond reasonable, and it interferes with the ability to perform the job. That's meant to be a high standard. So does that then say, well, anything short of that is okay? And the answer is no, because most organizations would say, look, while it may not reach the level of harassment or hostile environment, we still think that is contrary to our culture of civility and professionalism.
You know, it also talks about third party, right? The third party, the person that overhears, right? We a lot talk about individuals in the lunch area that, you know, two people have been having lunch, or a group of three or four people have had lunch for a long time, and they used to, you know, their conversation, the barriers have come down, right? They become more friendly and they just start saying things. But people overhear that. New people come in. And so that still may not be be acceptable to them, but unacceptable to others.
Right. And I think a couple of things. In California, there was a body of law called the bystander liability. And the question was whether or not someone who is a passive listener hears it, but is not the victim or the person that it was directed at, say a comment or a touching and the like. Does that person have a claim? And California was one of the first that said, yeah, it could be, because that has somehow offended that person, even though it wasn't directed at them. So that's one issue. And more states are looking at bystander or third-party liability. The other one that comes up, though, is, as I mentioned earlier, if that's a supervisor nearby and the comment was not made to him or her, but they see it or they hear it or they've heard of it from another source, can they turn a deaf ear or a blind eye to that? And the answer is no. Once you know about it, once you should know about it, you have a duty to respond. And the question is for the rank and file employee, do he or she have an affirmative obligation to report that? No, but more and more we're hearing that, of course, they are, that they're reporting this. And then, again, once it's reported, I saw this or I heard that this might be going on, the organization can't do a effective corporate lobotomy and say, well, unless it's in writing or unless the people come and speak to me directly, I didn't hear about it. The law doesn't accept that. The law says it's called constructive notice. Once you should know about it or knew or heard about it through another source, you have a duty to at least look into it.
We're talking with employment attorney James Reedy from Sheehan Finney, and we're talking about anti-discrimination training. You know, your tip number five here is review the employer's policy and provide specific examples of unacceptable behaviors as opposed to making general statements. I think that's so key, Jim. You know, people relate to what's in their environment, and tying the policy in really connects the company to what is acceptable.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you don't want to make general statements. You want to get to concrete examples and good ones. Now, again, what you say is, this is what our policy says, meaning that we're an equal opportunity employer, that we prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, age, race, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, and other protected classes. And let's talk about what that means. And I think the effective way that I've done it over, I quiz people, multiple choice, scenarios, fill in the blank, and have them respond to that. And then what I like to do is I like to back it up with a case that says, well, actually, this is what the court said in this regard, and this is how this worked out. And that really gets their attention because oftentimes it dispels myths or misunderstandings because in many regards, the law is built on common sense, but sometimes there are twists and turns. So providing specific examples while at the same time saying, this is not an exhaustive list because what I find is acceptable or reasonable, the person next to me may not. They may be a victim of sexual abuse in the past. They may have other sensitivities, religious or other cultural sensitivities I'm not aware of. And what was intended to be perhaps a benign statement could have an impact upon that person. So, you know, the defense in some of these cases is, well, I didn't mean it that way. For goodness sake, everyone's heard that joke before. Come on. You know, get a thick skin or come on, relax. Again, you don't know who receives it, and therefore giving specific examples but say this is not an exhaustive list is the way to proceed.
To tie in with those examples is really the next tip, which is clearly state consequences for unacceptable conduct. I think that ties again into the handbook and what the company will accept.
Yeah, and I think that you got to make that clear from the outset, which is, look, again, the supervisors are here. The supervisors would have been in a separate training, too, where you're really pounding them with this issue and their obligation. But the C-suite members are also in the room as well, and they are going to reinforce. And it's better if you can point to, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so's here, and if this happens, this is what will be done, that there is sort of organization-wide issues, which is lost productivity, lower employee retention if the morale is bad or the culture is bad, tarnished reputations for not only the employer but also the individuals, and this is why it's bad for our business and our organization, and it's contrary to who we are. But it's also potentially really bad for you, and we'll talk about that in a minute, too.
No, you're absolutely right. And it really, hey, look, you want the company to be around. You want to have a job. You want to continue to work and enjoy this organization. These things cannot happen because it's a bigger picture. Not only can you be held accountable, but, hey, look, this could shut us down.
Right, and I think that at the same time, if someone says they're so disconnected, they think, well, that's the organization. You guys figure it out. You've got lawyers. You've got HR people. You also make it personal, and you say, oh, no, let's be clear. Even if we're still around, you may not be a part of the team because that bad conduct could end up with the termination of your employment or demotion or lack of a pay raise and the like. Then it hits home.
No, it absolutely does. Hey, you know, we talked about it at the end of last segment, but I'm going to bring it up again, the 29th Annual Employment Law Review and Update. For she and Finney, you're going to be doing it at the Castleton Conference Center in Windham, New Hampshire on, let's see, what do we have here? May 25th from 8 a.m.
Thursday, May 25th, right.
Thursday, May 25th, 8 a.m. to 4:15. Great time. Talks about key success during times of change. And gosh, don't we know, there's a lot of change coming. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Steven Singer. Yep, that's me, the I Hate Steven Singer guy. People ask, what does this mean, I Hate Steven Singer? Well, it's mostly other jewelers that hate me. Why? Because we make the best Valentine's Day gift ever. It's a real long-stem American Beauty rose, lavishly and deeply dipped in pure 24-karat gold. And they last forever. Can you imagine a beautiful flower, a real rose that is preserved forever in 24-karat pure gold? Our famous gold-dipped roses start at only $59. They arrive to your door in a magnificent gold gift box with your own personalized love note. There must be a catch, right? Nope, that includes free shipping. Free personalized love note, all guaranteed for life, for only $59. Go now to ihatestevensinger.com or call 888-IHATE-STEVENSINGER. Visit us at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. If this is your first Steven Singer rose, I suggest the red. If you're a returning collector, check out our newest premium color, only available at ihatestevensinger.com. This is a gift she'll cherish forever.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Because you've booked with Booking.com, you, freedom lover, are on the road and carefree. You're not worried that dealership billboards spoil beautiful views or that the fresh, cool breeze gives you a mouthful of fumes. No, because you know in just a few more miles, you'll be free to rock around in the perfect Booking hotel, treehouse, or rustic cottage of your dreams. Thanks to Planet Earth's number one accommodation site, Booking.com. Booking.yeah!
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we're talking with attorney Jim Reedy, employment attorney for She and Finney. We're talking about how not to create problems you are trying to avoid, tips for effective in-house anti-discrimination training. You know, Jim, we've gone through some great tips so far, and I'm going to recap a couple of them. The program should be live and facilitated by a qualified trainer. Make sure the C-suite is on board. Make sure supervisors are on the same page. Emphasize what is unacceptable versus what is illegal. Review the employer's policy and provide specific examples of unacceptable behaviors. Clearly state consequences for those unacceptable conduct. Those are the ones we've done so far, so let's continue with our top tips. Focus number 7 is focus on risk factors that increase the likelihood of harassment, discrimination, and retaliation. Jim, talk about that.
So what have we just come through in addition to this, the election that we are all too keenly aware of? We've also just come through the holiday season. And what happens in the holiday season? Holiday parties. What happens at holiday parties? Well, some of that has toned down over the years, but there's still alcohol. There are still good vibes and good feeling. And sometimes there's inappropriate conduct as alcohol reduces inhibitions and the like. Sometimes there are problems in that regard. So one of the risk factors that increase the likelihood of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation would be, of course, holiday parties, alcohol, things happening off premises, like at a company event, or even just working with customers and vendors and so on. Some of the other risk factors include, as we talked about before, use of electronic media, where you're under the surface of where you might not be detected, at least immediately. Some of the other things that come up that increase the likelihood of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation would be the inattentive supervisor, someone not paying attention or thinking that they can handle the matter themselves. It's too casual, or perhaps they're too harsh, and someone's afraid to come forward and complain because they don't know how the supervisor's going to respond, or they're afraid of the coworker who may be intimidating. Gosh, if I say something, then you know I put my job in jeopardy because I don't know how the company's going to handle it, or this person could make my life miserable. So what you want to do is you want to provide them with some assurance, meaning the employees, that look, come forward. It's a safe environment. We want to respond to your concerns as quickly as possible. We want to get everyone back to work. That's because that's the key of why we're here, to perform whatever work we're supposed to perform. And we want to reduce the likelihood of, one, these things happening, and two, that people will not properly come forward with complaints or concerns.
And I think one of the things that you mentioned there is reduce the likelihood that people will understand clearly, right, what they need to report and what this really is. And that goes right into tip 8, which is providing examples, including passive forms of discrimination. So talk a little bit about that, because I think that's a key, you know, narrowing factor of what we're talking about, or broadening factor in terms of making people understand what this is all about.
Sure, because, you know, as you walk away from a training program, perhaps one of the best things you can do is, in addition to an evaluation that we're going to talk about in a minute, but one of the things that comes out of an evaluation is, okay, so what did you learn today? What constitutes sex harassment? What constitutes hostile environment? And so on. And if people raise their hands, like, years ago I was going off to doing a training program, and my oldest daughter, who's now 25, but I think she was 3 or 4 at the time, and she said to me, "Daddy, what are you doing today?" And I said, "Well, honey, it's like, how do you tell a 4-year-old that you're going to talk to a group of employers about avoiding the legal risks of sex harassment?" I said, "Well, honey, I'm going to talk today to people about working and playing nice." And she said, "No biting or pinching, right?" And I said, "Exactly."
That's a great answer.
But sometimes, that's what people, adults, take away from this sex harassment training, which is no biting, no pinching, no grabbing, we get it. No off-color jokes, we get it. But oftentimes it's far more subtle than that. A comment that perhaps is intended to be innocent or complimentary could be offensive to someone, meaning, "Wow, without that sweater, you look like you've lost weight," or, "Are you doing something different at the gym?" Or, "Nice haircut." And sometimes it's tone and intonation that gets to that, again, the inappropriate touching or the like, sometimes can be even subtle, just a brush by, unintentional or perhaps intentional. And again, where it really comes up is electronic communication and the emails, the text, and so on, because as we all know all too well, context is absolutely lost. Absolutely lost in electronic communication. And what makes it even worse, something that the millennials and my kids are very well aware of, emoticons.
Oh, no question.
The little smiling face and the like, or even just something, a gesture and so on, which can be misunderstood.
No, there's no question. You know, it's interesting. One of the techniques we've done in some of the training techniques is say, "Hey, could everybody please pull out their phone?" Which seems contradictory to training. But we'd say, "Could you go to your Facebook page and scroll till you see something that could be offensive?" By the way, it takes them only about one pull down to get to something right that could be possibly offensive. And that today is different. You would never imagine that an organization where today they allow a lot of these things, or if they don't, people still have their phones, they can pull it out and scroll down, and something offensive can be on that screen to somebody.
In that regard, what's the danger with social media? The danger with social media is everybody wants to have a, as I put it, a faux friend. the electronic friend. And it's this totem pole that is built up by, I have X number of friends. I heard recently that the president-elect has 49 million followers on Twitter.
My understanding is he broke 50.
Yeah, and sometimes it's almost the rubbernecking effect. It's like it's like watching a car wreck. Other times, you know, followers want to follow along what's going on, but more importantly and more directly with regard to this, it's supervisors. When supervisor is a friend on Facebook, or as Belichick would say, Snapface, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, and the like, when the supervisor is the friends with the people that he or she is supposed to be supervising and enforcing the rules, potentially the lines are blurred. Actually, likely the lines are blurred. And furthermore, they may say things casually outside of work, but you can't erase the fact that within the organization, I'm still your boss and supervisor. So people get a little bit too relaxed, especially after a cocktail or on a long weekend, and they say or do something or they forward something, or more importantly, as someone who was up for the Baseball Hall of Fame who lost votes, he retweeted something that someone else did, and therefore there is attribution to him. Similarly, a supervisor can do the same, and that is it could be a passive form of harassment because somehow he or she has endorsed the activity of someone else that someone else may find offensive.
We're talking with Jim Reedy, employment attorney for Sheehan Finney. Tip number 9 really goes to the fact that harassment can also be about race, ethnicity, religion, or other areas. So really, you know, it is that this environment, this hostile environment, can be for other reasons other than just sex.
Absolutely, and the Supreme Court has spoken to that issue. And in that regard, they've said specifically it can apply to disability under the ADA or state law, race, ethnicity, religion, and so on. Meaning that, the other thing that comes up is, you know, we often think it's the males harassing the females, but in the last several years, every year there's an increase in the number of males that are filing sex harassment cases against one, either other males or against female supervisors. And in one regard, you also, in some way, perversely applaud that because that shows that women are breaking through the glass ceiling and they're becoming supervisors. But unfortunately, you may have that bad-acting female who is acting inappropriately towards a male. But last year, 16% of the claims filed with the EEOC for sex harassment were by males, and that's an interesting development. So, but it's not just sex, it's not just gender-based. It can be a subset of that, which would be maternity leave or paternity leave, but more importantly, it could also be race, ethnicity, religion, disability, and so on.
This next tip that you provide is really so critical for the supervisors. How they must clearly respond to complaints, concerns, rumors, and observed conduct. I think that's critical in regards to ensuring the protection to the organization and themselves.
Yes, and therefore you have to provide them with tips because, again, every supervisor is different. Every supervisor, how he or she interacts with their team is different. The esprit de corps, the relationship they have, and so on. Some are difficult, some are not so difficult, but the bottom line is, look, make it clear. Your responsibility is if you see it, if you hear of it, if you hear a rumor of it, you must bring it forward. When do you bring it forward? Immediately. So how do you respond to someone? Do you say put it in writing? Do you have to give me details? Do you have to provide witnesses and so on? No. What you say is, supervisors, avoid situations like, huh, that's weird. That doesn't sound like so-and-so. Instead, you make it simple. Say, well, thank you for bringing this forward and bring it to my attention. The company takes this very seriously. Let me tell you what's going to happen next. I'd like to get a little bit more information from you, and this is not a deposition. This is not give me the history of your life up to the present time. Tell me a little bit more about what happened and so on. I'm going to bring this to HR, and HR is going to likely talk with you about this, but I want to assure you that we take these seriously, that we appreciate you coming forward, and that, you know, in doing so, you are protected effectively from retaliation or discrimination, as long as what you're doing is in good faith. But that being said, we're not going to judge that right now. We're going to take what you've asked and concern. What we want to do is we want to focus on you doing your job and having a pleasant and productive experience here. We appreciate you coming forward. We're going to deal with this as quickly as we can. And so let me tell you about the next steps. But again, this is what's going
to
happen.
Well, to that end, a supervisor can promise discretion, but he cannot promise confidentiality, correct? That's the next step.
Very important. Because if the person says, well, this is just between you and me, the answer is, I'm not a priest, and that's not how this works. I'm not your lawyer. There's no attorney-client privilege here. In fact, it can't be between you and me because I have to bring it to HR. I need to bring it to the C-suite. We need to deal with this. Now, does this have to be World War III? No. It can probably be dealt with pretty quickly and pretty promptly and effectively and the like. But we still need to have others involved. And I've actually had a number of cases where, and there was a classic case involving a large retail box store where the person was sexually harassed by a coworker. So two coworkers, one guy just didn't get her hints. She had no interest in dating him, and he kept following her. And it was affecting her job and affecting her productivity. So she complained to a supervisor who had recently gone to a training, and she said, I'm miserable. This guy just will not leave me alone. I've told him no, he doesn't understand, and he just keeps coming after me and asking me out, and I told him no, and it makes me fearful. And he said, okay, well, I just went to training. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to HR. She said, stop right there. I'm a single mom. I know how this stuff works, and he's been here longer than me, and I'll be out of a job, and I can't afford that. He said, but I need to bring it forward. That's what the training says. That's what the manual says. It's my responsibility. And she said, look, let me tell you this. If you do, I will deny it. He said, then what do you want me to do? She said, just fix it. So he tried. He transferred the guy to another shift in another department. The guy, like a homing pigeon, came back, bothered her. 3 months later, she sued the company and said, I told a supervisor 3 months ago, and the problem continued. Now, she skipped the other part. Well, the other part, in one way, doesn't really matter, which is I told him not to share with others. It doesn't matter. He had an independent obligation to bring that information forward. You promise discretion on those that are on a need-to-know basis, but you cannot promise confidentiality.
So, Jim, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes part one of the great series that we're going to be talking to Jim about, of how not to create problems you are trying to avoid, tips for effective in-house anti-discrimination training. Stay tuned, because we're going to have a part two of this next week. Jim, thank you so much for being on the HR Power Hour today.
Thanks so much, and look forward to the next session.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerylDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez at VerylDana. The big game is right around the corner. That's right, the Super Bowl. How is this at all relevant to human resources? I'll tell you. When was the last time that you looked at your leave procedures? It may not be surprising, but the day after the Super Bowl will not likely be the most productive day in company history. Make sure you have set expectations beforehand, preferably in the form of a policy in your personnel manual. Set forth how people are to notify you if they are going to be late or unable to work. Is a text message sufficient to a coworker, or is the expectation that the employee will talk directly to their supervisor? Your company culture depends a lot on how you're going to deal with this. There is no right or wrong way. To discuss more, contact a member of VerylDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group for more insight and advice.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerylDana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m., or streaming live on WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.